Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland. It's the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. And it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good because everybody now can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. I was supposed to have commonly known as Dom on here for 2 hours to give us a report on Bilderberg, but because I was making myself breakfast before coming on the show, he has now decided that it's not worth his time because I didn't send him the links to the show ahead of time. What a dick. All right, commonly known as Dom, you're a dick. It's just that simple. Right, moving on. Let me just make sure they block. Thank you. All right, good. He's blocked. Now I never have to deal with them again. See, this is what you do, ladies and gentlemen. If somebody's a douchebag, just block them so you don't have to deal with their douchebaggery anymore. I mean, it's just that simple, isn't it? Okay. Well, considering my guest and all my plans for the show have just been fracked up, I'm going to open the caller line. So, ladies and gentlemen, the caller number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525 if you have anything to talk about. We were going to be talking about Bilderberg, but yeah, I haven't been following it at all. Interestingly enough, haven't seen a single video about Bilderberg or nothing. Nothing. I think that's it's almost like pretty bad of me, isn't it? All right. So I've got the New Zealand Herald open now, just looking through the headlines. Now, I don't know how anybody else manages to read mainstream media and give a frack about it. I mean, look at these boring headlines. OCR left unchanged. Oh, the official cash rates left unchanged. How freaking exciting. Father relives Christmas tragedy. Oh, great. A single person somewhere having some description of tragedy. How interesting for the entire fracking country. You know, it's just when you've got a small country and there ain't a whole lot going on, you can imagine how poor the news is, which is interesting because the New Zealand Herald mostly copies its news from Reuters and so on and so forth. All right. Let's go to see their copied articles, eh? Because everything else in here is just boring. Boring. Okay. Schools about more than passing exams. Here we go. And here's an interesting one. Opinion poll, how to not be a dick on Trade Me. That's funny. All right. by Peter O'Connor, Ministry's national standards exercise is not visionary. It's more about failure than success, writes Peter O'Connor. The release of national standards data this week has been a meaningless exercise. The continued variation between classrooms, schools and regions makes the Ministry report pointless. The data tells us nothing of the true value and worth of what happens in classrooms on a daily basis. It is, however, part and parcel of an agenda that will continue to undermine public education. Now, these people don't get it, Mr. Peter O'Connor. You don't get it, do you? Agenda 21, it's meant to dumb all the kids down. That's what all these national standards are about. It's to make sure that all the standards are lowered. It's to lower the bar to have some very, very stupid people in your country. Okay? That's basically what's going on here. I had, what was I talking about? I had an inkling the other day of just how bad education is getting. And I was just thinking, man, high school, that really sucked. like if the classroom didn't suck and was boring as frack, then the people sucked because they were all slaves. You know? I don't know. Maybe that's a bit harsh. Maybe that's just kind of a bitter retrospect of mine. But I think that's basically the case, right? You know, I didn't have a lot of good times with authorities in school, as you can imagine. I think I got suspended 17 times from high school. Yeah. And it didn't work out too well for me. Especially trying to pursue higher education. That was another thing that really fracked me around. I can't be bothered doing that article. I haven't even had my coffee yet, ladies and gentlemen. This is how rushed off my feet I am, and then my guest cancels on me. Gosh, dang it, that's so fracking irritating. We have Max Egan messaging me, though. I wonder if he'll come on. that'd be actually quite nice. Bail me out right in the middle of it. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry. Hold on. Let me scull a bit of coffee because a lot of people don't realize how I do this show. You know, like, oh my God, where does he get the energy from? It's not rocket science. It's rocket fuel. And you know, just slurp it back, ladies and gentlemen. Especially if you're a talk radio show host and you like to, you know, get your stuff together, on air. Trust me, coffee is absolutely essential. Watch this. Oh God, that's better. I can't believe it. Just how egregiously exhausted I get if I don't have my morning coffee fix. You know what I'm saying? How addictive is coffee? Like I could give up cigarettes, give up weed. That's easy. You know. By day two, day three, it's basically over. You know, it's not that hard. Coffee, on the other hand, for a week plus, and I didn't go past the week. That's why it's plus. Headaches, feelings of utter dehydration as your body tends to crave the stuff. It kills 10,000 people a year. Caffeine, you know that. And yesterday on the show, I drank so many fracking coffees. I swear to God, I must have broken something because I came off the air with Suzanne Pozzola, Occupy Corporatism, and I was shaking, like literally having this little shake kind of thing. It was really freaky, and it took me a while for the caffeine levels in my blood to go down. You know, I just drank a lot of water and ate a bit of food. You know, that kind of thing. It worked out. And we have a caller coming on the line. Ralph Engel, caller on the line. You are on the air on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Welcome.
Hey, mate. How you doing?
I'm good, bro. You're calling us from England, aren't you, mate?
Yeah, I do. I thought I'd save the silence a bit because your guest cancelled. So.
Yeah. Well, you're in England yourself too. So any word of Bilderberg out there?
Oh, it's quite interesting, actually. They're all over the place. I'm currently working as a waiter for an agency. And guess who our biggest clients are?
The Bilderbergers?
It's all finance.
Yes.
Honestly, they're living a champagne-styled lifestyle. and people had no idea how much wastage in terms of food, just the lavish parties that they have, entertainment, everything. It's the parties are just out of this world. They can literally sum up a thought in their head, like if they want a theme, that sort of thing. It's all happening, and our biggest clients are financial people.
Well, have you noticed that this is what the finance world really is about? It's actually not about making money or being productive. It's about, you know, debauchery.
Exactly. And, like, the interesting thing about my job is the things that I sort of overhear as a waiter, because, you know, they think you don't exist. So while you're serving them, I'm sort of eavesdropping here and there. Some of the things that they say is, like, you know, if you're making money, just keep doing it. So there's no thought as to how they're actually destroying the economic climate at the moment.
Well, of course, they don't have a lack of concern about the destruction that they've wrought upon us. And I think that's because they're actually the causes of it and they love it. But then again, I was thinking about something David Icke was saying, is that he wants to talk to the people in the police uniforms and the dark suits in government and how they have no power because they're not actually creating the system. They're just serving it, and they really have no idea. And I think this is the problem with all of society, isn't it, Ralph? People just have no fracking idea the purpose that they serve and the things that they accomplish. And they don't have any idea either that they're expendable.
Well, I think people realise that sort of like the jobs that they dish out, for example, every single person is doing one little bit of the chain, and most people don't see the bigger picture because they don't see outside of what they have to do. So things like the security guards, for example, they don't know what they're guarding at the front of the door of the venue, that sort of thing. It's just everything is segregated as such so that no one knows exactly what the bigger picture is. I mean, I'm quite fortunate, I guess, to see the inside story, and also being an awake person, I sort of see things like, you know, just like looking at people's name tags, for example, what companies they're from, and who's mingling with who. And because these parties happen often as well, it's really interesting to see what's actually going on. And as soon as you start connecting the dots a little bit, say, for example, this bank is working with this bank, that sort of thing. I went, for example, you'll love this. I did a job at a gallery, a Saatchi gallery, a really nice gallery here in London. And it's actually for Credit Suisse. And they talk about derivatives. They talk about overtaking real assets. I think they want to overtake sort of like wineries, that sort of thing. And they talk about doing it aggressively. So, you know, then it's a game. But unfortunately, with every game, there are losers. And there are a lot of losers at the moment in this climate. And for them, it's all about getting all the best assets, all the best land, and keeping it all for themselves, really.
See, people like you and I don't share this mentality, okay? We don't like to steal. We don't like to accumulate vast amounts of stuff by screwing people over, all right? And I think most people are like that. You just don't actually want to be too much of a douchebag to other people, do you? And here's the difference. We've got empathy, bro. Empathy. These people fracking don't, do they? Are they, by chance, very smiley, happy-looking people who have no fracking depth to their character whatsoever?
Well, they dress in nice clothes. Like I say, they live a champagne lifestyle. So, you know, they serve by heaps of stuff, too much stuff, actually, to serve little the amount of people that they have and their guests. Normally, a lot of our parties, there's only about 100 guests and there's dozens of staff. There's probably two per person attending them their every need. And for them, it's that power. It's that they are very smiley, like you say. They've sort of got this this look to their eyes like they're, I can't describe it, like they're vultures, like they're sort of always, I know, they don't, they've got this different look to their eye.
What, like the no soul kind of look?
Not no soul. I mean, they're obviously enjoying their time and stuff like that, but I guess for them it's power. It's like they don't see, they see people as expendable, like you say. They see people as cattle, as assets. They talk about people as I can't remember how they put it. It's sort of just human capital is how they put it. So people are just animals, really, to them. They look at a person and they say, well, how much money can this person make for a company, say, and how little can we pay them? Mm. They talk a lot about debt markets. And they share this information regularly amongst themselves. So they're in a real strong position compared to everyone else.
Would you say they're in a bubble? You know, like there's not a whole...
I wouldn't say they're in a bubble. I'd say they're very clever. I'd say they're very clever, and they're dealing with other very clever people with, for example, the head of one person of an industry. A lot of the time, say, for example, if it's the housing industry, the head of the housing industry would be talking to a head of a bank. So these two heads, you know, they're in very strong positions and they can manipulate the markets accordingly. How I explain it is it's like a triangle, right? Each of these industries, there's one person that deals with the top of that triangle, and another person that deals with another triangle at the top of that triangle, and they sort of, everyone else below that is affected, and it's only due to these two people at the top. And because those two people are sort of playing the game, they meet up regularly, they have these champagne lifestyles, they're in a really strong position. Okay. And for them really it's a game.
All right.
Well,
Okay, well, we're coming off the break now, Ralph. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. The call-in number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're trying to check it and rock it and kick it, innit? And we're speaking with Ralph Engel, who is he is This Flight Tonight. I think you can check him out at thisflighttonight.com. So he has some fabulous music. And if you happen to be around London walking the streets at night, you might be able to see him busking illegally. And my very special guest also joining us is Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com. Suzanne, welcome.
Hello everyone.
I don't know if you've been listening to the conversation previously, but Ralph's working in a bit of a finance sector job at the moment, and talking about how they don't really care about anybody and how they treat everybody like cattle, and they're sort of scum. Who would have thunk it?
Just to clarify there, Susan, I'm not sure if you were listening before. I don't work in the finance sector as such. I'm sort of at the very bottom as a waiter, but I do see a lot of these finance heads, and they're another level, really. They're a different breed. How I say it is, because I recently did a trip to Egypt, and it was really interesting to see how history hasn't really changed. For example, the pharaohs in Egypt, they'd have all these waiters waitering at them with all these wonderfully laid out dishes and things like that, and it was, everything is so extravagant. And this is they're living the pharaoh life. It's exactly the same it is now. The food that they serve is just, it's another level. It's absolutely amazing. And it's, yeah, it's all served on a silver platter for them. And so for them, they're living in a completely different world to everybody else. And I think how I perceive it is they see their games as a game, and they see people as just basically numbers of debt. They talk about debt management a lot, and it's for them, it's just maybe numbers on a screen, and they sometimes forget that these numbers on the screen are actually to deal with real life, with real people. So, but I think they're a little bit disconnected.
Well, that's kind of what I meant by them living in a bubble, Ralph, is that they're very much disconnected from the people that they rule, sort of thing. And I think that's what breeds a lot of contempt in society, is just simple unfamiliarity with the consequences of your actions. If you don't have any consequences to your actions, what's to stop you from acting horribly?
Absolutely, yeah, and they're true. Totally removed from average everyday life that we live. They live in a completely different world where everything is given to them, and if they want something, they get it. It's not a matter of looking in your bank account and seeing whether or not you can afford it or which credit card hasn't been maxed out yet. They have no concept of what we go through. If they want something, they just say that they want it, and somebody brings it to them. So in the same respect, we have no concept of the world they live in, and they have no concept of the world that we live in.
I'll give you an example of the things that they can just summon up. If they think of an idea in their mind, it just happens. I know of a person that actually works in a job, and her job is basically, she works for rich clients, and her job is to create whatever they have in mind. For example, a lot of these people really high up, really rich billionaires, they have a lot of free time, so they travel a lot, and that's a passion for them. They could just hop on a plane to LA, for example, and just overnight in their private jet. And a lot of the time, a lot of them are collectors. Basically, like if they see, for example, an old church, they can go to a agency and be like, I want to recreate that old church, that 1700, year old church, and I want that in my garden. And believe it or not, that was her job. And one of her clients, for example, you know those caves with the icicles? Isotites, what are they called? The little things at the roof?
I don't know. Isolites? I don't know.
It's really late. I can't think of it. She had to recreate a cave with an old cave with isolites at the top and an old church. And Matt, she had to make that up. And, it's just little things like that. They can just do this, basically. They have the resources. Unfortunately, I think they're stealing a lot of the assets from taxpayers as well. They talk a lot about how to avoid tax loops. Things like that. So for them, it's a game, and they've got a lot of advantage to everybody else.
They're in the club, man. The club that none of us are in.
Yeah.
Now, talking about Bilderberg as well, Suzanne, I have not covered Bilderberg at all on the show while it's been going on. Ralph's in England. What have you heard about it?
Well, it's really interesting, actually. I was driving home with my bandmate. We play in a band called This Flight Tonight, as you know. But we were really intrigued because we were driving down this road, and there's all these cops. Seriously,
I think it looked like a golf course or something like that, but for every entrance, there was about 8 cops. And we thought it was a crime scene or something like that. And it was only till I did my research later. I think Alex Jones was covering it. I think he was protesting outside Bilderberg and he was talking to the security guards and telling them about the corruption of Bilderberg and how they're going to be stealing their pension funds in the next 5 years, that sort of thing. And then I was like, holy moly, that's what we saw. And anyways, that was my experience with Bilderberg. But what intrigued me, and my guitarist didn't see at the time, was just the amount of resources that they're just wasting. All these policemen guarding them.
From how many people? Because I've heard people say that there was like virtually nobody there, and then I've heard other people say that there was speeches in front of crowds of like that you couldn't see the end of.
Well, for us, I don't know. I mean, everyone would have saw something different, but for us, it was driving down this road. It was a very private road. You know, like basically, it looked like New Zealand. There's a lot of bush. You know, it's just in the middle of nowhere, basically. This wasn't in central London as such. It was sort of Zone 7 in the very outskirts of London. So, but there was no walking traffic, and there was just this one single road, and maybe just the traffic itself was very minor. And I think just for us even, driving past this place, you wouldn't know what was happening around the corner because it was all, you know, closed up from view due to bushes and things like that. But it was really interesting because we drove past it and we were wondering what's going on there, and we didn't really think much of it. And it was only until I saw the video of Alex Jones and saw the area that he was in, and it was definitely that was it. I think, and that's really all I can say about my experience with the Bilderberg event.
Well, I'd like Suzanne, if you could, to comment on recent Bilderberg meetings, because I've heard Alex Jones has been on BBC ranting again, and I don't know. I hear mixed whisperings, I guess. I wonder what your perspective was.
I'm kind of waiting till everything dies down. I see that Dan Dix is over there, and they've got like a platform and a lot of equipment, and they've got like a huge, it almost looks like a stage that they've got out there. It's more high tech, it appears, than it was before, so maybe they've gotten some funding to go out there. But yeah, Alex Jones went on BBC Sunday on Channel 2, I think BBC 2, and made a complete ass out of himself on the show. And the host of the show said that as soon as Alex Jones knew that the cameras were off and that they had ended the show, that he changed his demeanor completely. And the host said that it must be all an act when he gets up on stage and starts ranting and raving, because it didn't seem genuine to him at all. Which doesn't shock me.
It's an act. That's what he does when he goes on mainstream media. And actually, this is a good thing, because if you're putting on an act when you're going on in front of mainstream media, it means that you're wanting to get a specific reaction out of them, right? And I've seen him on, say, Piers Morgan, and I've seen what Piers Morgan did to, say, Jesse Ventura, for example, talking over that kind of thing. And Alex is very smart, so he knew that they'd probably try and do that to him, you know, demonize him, whatever. So he just comes out all guns blazing as soon as the cameras are on, gets out the information, I have the documents, et cetera, et cetera. And then as soon as he jumps out of the studio, he's back to being a friendly, loving, jovial old Alex.
Exactly. And the thing that was funny was after he was on the show, he stood outside the studio with his with Paul Joseph Watson, and he basically admitted that he goes ahead and makes a show of it. He claims that he has to do this because he's
Suzanne, hold on a second.
Become a martyr.
Is the NSA pushing your buttons or something like that? I hear the phone kind of going.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe one of the Rugrats.
Can you hear me now?
Maybe one of the Rugrats in the next room. Oh, yeah, we can hear you just fine. It's just every now and again somebody presses a phone button and we hear the tone.
Oh, that's weird. Maybe it's from the show we did last night.
It's as soon as you mention Bilderberg and Alex Jones, mate, that's when they come in. That's when they get you. You know, it's kind of like body snatchers. They only get you when you sleep. The NSA snatchers, they only get you when you're talking about Alex Jones and Bilderberg.
Yeah, Alex Jones, I've written a couple of articles about him and exposing his ties to Stratfor and the fact that he gets regular emails from Stratfor. And things like that, and how he hired Molly Maroney.
I'm unfamiliar with what Stratfor is.
Stratfor is, the CIA is not allowed to legally operate in the United States. So they have a shell corporation called Stratfor, and Stratfor collects intelligence and disseminates it at a cost to corporations and governments and all these things. So he, through his Infowars.net, which is a mirror site of Infowars.com, there is an email address called oneoldpath.infowars.net. And that is on the list for Stratfor for getting emails for intelligence and anything that they email out, like general emails to people. And that Infowars.net, if you go on Who Is database, you will find that it is owned by Free Speech LLC, which is the company that Jones owns, where he produces Infowars.com and all the other stuff, the television show and everything else. So he does receive emails from Stratfor. That's probably where he gets all of his intelligence. Other than that, going back to the show that he did on BBC, he was standing outside the studio and saying that if he didn't behave this way, then, you know, he would become a martyr, and that's why he hasn't died. When he was on the show, the second guest asked him, well, if you're exposing all of this stuff about the Bilderbergs and all this New World Order, how come they haven't killed you? And that's when he proclaimed that, you know, he's so scary important to the movement that if they went to kill him, he would become a martyr and all of his audience would freak out because he was no longer around. And so they keep him alive because he's too high profile. It's not worth killing him. And that's the narcissism of Alex Jones. That's what he thinks, that he's so scary important that he can't be taken out.
Nobody can't be taken out.
Exactly. If they're going to shoot JFK in the face right in front of the audience, and they're going to shoot Martin Luther King, and they're going to kill Bill Cooper right standing outside his house, why aren't they going to take out Alex Jones? I mean, what makes him so important?
You got to wonder, actually. Just think about the massive popularity of InfoWars, and think about all the people that are listening to him. I think he's actually got a point, don't you? That with the millions of people that are listening to him every single day, and the paranoia that sets in when you're listening to it, and trust me, I listened to Alex Jones for a couple of years. Believe me, the paranoia starts to set in relatively soon. And if he were to have been killed back then when I was just totally obsessively listening to it every single day, sure, I would have freaked out. I would have gone and done something crazy. It's just multiply Vinny crazy by a million, and that would be the reaction that Alex Jones dies. I mean, like, you think about Hollywood stars who allegedly get whacked, as what was his name? Randy Quaid came out publicly and said that Hollywood has a bunch of star whackers working in the industry, and they kill off stars who are starting to learn about the Illuminati. And what's interesting is these stars die, and there's not much of an uproar. It's just, oh, they're dead, drug overdose, whatever, all total setups, allegedly. And on the other hand, they haven't built up their audience of people that are almost exclusively truthers who are listening to this kind of content, are they? They've got masses of people who are on various different planes of awareness, whereas Jones, on the other hand, you take him out, everybody's on that plane of awareness already that that there's evil scumbags who would try and assassinate him. I think he's actually quite right. He would be taken as a bit of a martyr. But, you know, I could be wrong.
Well, I think that they need people in the movement. I go back to the article that I wrote last year about how the DHS plans to deal with the Patriot movement. And going back to 2009, they outlined that they were going to infiltrate the alternative movement, create plants, and put people in there to move the audience to the direction that they wanted them to go. And we've got people that we assume are working with the government. We have useful idiots in the movement who are just making waves and trying to make names for themselves and get clicks to their website. But all of this works toward moving us away from our goal, which is to return not only the United States to a constitutional republic, but to return the globe to each nation to its sovereignty out of the grip of the technocratic regime and the one-world government. So I absolutely agree with you. Jones fits. He has a purpose. It's just not the purpose that everybody thinks it is.
Also, in regards to the occupied movement, I think the people that we're up against know the power of the movement. And so what they're trying to do as well is put people in within the movement to divide and conquer that movement as well. Because if we forget about what we're actually fighting for, and again, to reiterate, what we're fighting for is derivatives, illegal trading of assets, money equals debt, so putting people in debt on purpose. This is what we're fighting for. People have to realize that money is made out of thin air. If you go to a bank and if you want a loan, for example, you know, all they have to do is type numbers into a computer and voila, that's it. A lot of people don't realize that concept. They don't realize that money these days isn't backed by anything anymore. And this is what we're fighting for. There's just the awareness. Be aware of the game, and, you know, keep it simple. But I think they are trying to put people within the movement to demonize sort of leaders within that movement, to discredit them, to make them look bad, to make them look crazy, all these things, because they know the power of the movement, I think. And I think It's in their faces. They know the power of it. So.
Yeah,
but we need to stay focused. They can't divide and conquer the movement, because as soon as they do that, you know.
I think we're dividing and conquering ourselves in a lot of ways with some of the people out there. We've got a caller on the line here in a 347 area code. Where are you calling from? Caller, welcome. Caller, you're on the air. 347 area code. 347-957-86. Come on. You're on the air, man. We can hear you. No? You don't want to talk? Okay. Silly person. Back to the...
This is one of the people, man.
Yeah. Here we are. They're calling in to sabotage and derail.
They're pretending that the caller's not interested in the show, so they've just hung up.
Totally. In fact, we had I had a guest on a while back, and then we had a caller call into the show, and the first thing the caller says, what are you guys actually talking about today? I've missed most of the show. It's just, come on. You know, people, you know, calling in out there, 218-339-8525. There's two requirements to be a caller. Number one, have something to fracking say. Number two, know what we've been talking about. You know, you have to be listening for at least a couple of minutes and like form some kind of opinion or question,
tell,
you know. Something to contribute.
Tell them to go back and watch. tell them to go back and watch Zeitgeist, the documentary, or Money is Debt, or something like that, and then bring call back.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Okay, now, speaking about this, cognitive infiltration of the truth movement, Rahm Emanuel, the US science, that's what he called for, okay? And he specifically mentioned 9/11 truth. So, here's the question. People get paranoid, right? So, if people are prone to getting paranoid and they're in a movement which is conspiracy-oriented, which lends itself to paranoia even more, if you start talking about infiltrators, COINTELPRO, and so on and so forth, are you putting the horse before the cart? Because I've been accused of being COINTELPRO many, many times, okay? And I don't know why. and
it's probably them trying to demonize your character. That's what they do, is they try to good leaders, and I see you as one of the best leaders in New Zealand, Vinny, because there's no one else doing what you're doing, and it's a really great thing that you're
no one else
by default. Yes. No, you're doing a pretty good job, and there'll be people out there. You're in public profile now. There'll be people out there trying to demonize your character, and that's what it's all about. If they can demonize your character, people forget about what you're actually talking about. So, just to reiterate again, the important thing about the main conspiracy, it's not even a conspiracy, is that throughout history, people have used money as a tool of slavery. And also, a lot of these kingdoms, I have to mention this because I thought it was really interesting. You know how we have a lot of borders within the world at the moment? So you've got a lot of, you need passports to get to certain areas, borders, that sort of thing. Borders weren't created until the 1700s, apparently. And same with money. It's a new concept, and people forget about that. But they're born into a world where they're trained from the very beginning to see it as a normal thing. It's really interesting, actually. I oversaw this, like, early childhood training book, for example, and they have little pictures and saying, this is an apple, A for apple, yay. Also, D for dollar, you know, that sort of thing. It's like, right from the word go, you're ingrained to think that money is a natural, organic thing. But you've got to remember that money is a new thing, and money is used as a tool of slavery, and that's all.
I'm thinking about, like, you do a children's booklet like that, but do really big, complicated words so the kids become smarter a lot quicker, you know. A for asinine, B for beryllium, something
of that. A for derivative.
Yeah. D for derivative, C for conspiracy, F for fluoride, you know. You imagine the conspiracy ABC. All the way up to Z for zeitgeist. Because I've also got this feeling, bro, that what's happening now in the movement is that people are getting so obsessed with COINTELPRO that they've become COINTELPRO themselves, and they don't even know what it is, right? Like my mate Mike, my bandmate, bro. He was like, "Oh man, I think they're COINTELPRO," and I asked him, "Do you know what COINTELPRO means? Like the word COINTELPRO?" It's like. He didn't even know what COINTELPRO means, and he's accusing somebody of being COINTELPRO, which he doesn't know what it means.
people sometimes, they just echo what they hear. So, for example, I've been reading this, the George Orwell 1984 book recently. It's a great book, and it's really a great insight to what's actually happening right now. But, where was I going with this? Yeah, people just echo what they hear, even if it's complete false fabrication. In George Orwell, the 1984 book, they talk about history, for example, is because an event or something like that happened so long ago, people just fabricate it. They could, fabricate a phony photograph, type a bunch of random facts, and there we go, that's your fact. And then people take that and they just echo what they've learnt, and that's not the right way to do things. You just got keep your eyes open, you know, make a decision for yourself, because the world is not what it seems.
Mm. All right, now we're going to go to our caller now in a 615 area code. Caller, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, am I on the air?
You are indeed.
Hello? Oh, well, wonderful. Great fan of the show. I really like how Suzanne Posel questions Alex Jones and Rand Paul and all those kind of things. And I just have a suggestion. The asset that Alex Jones has to the opposition is just what you said. He acts like a maniac. So, you know, he exposes way too much for me to think that the government really likes him. If it probably weren't for him, I probably wouldn't be listening to you guys. But just the fact that he goes on shows and acts like a maniac allows them to then turn around and demonize him. So your thoughts on that?
Here's what I think about that. Did you see the normal Piers Morgan show and how many hits he gets on YouTube? You know, thousands of hits per video. You see Alex Jones go on and act like a maniac. Millions of hits. Millions and millions. It becomes a national talking point. Do you not think that that's effective marketing?
I think so, and it may be, a battle between the two sides. They think they're going to get him on. They think they're going to demonize him, and then he gets on, and then maybe he wins. But the BBC had to know. They had to, like, want him on there and know that he was going to do that. And she's right. He almost did that on cue. Comparing it to the Piers Morgan show, he really just almost seemed, and I love the Piers Morgan thing, but he almost seemed like on cue, like he was doing it. But then again, they have to know he's going to do that and he's cooperating. But I just think that, you know, that's the only asset that I can really see. If he is an agent for him, then he's doing a lot of damage to them. But perhaps he can be controlled by business.
My former producer has the saying, how you do anything is how you do everything. If he's fake on air on BBC, what's to say he's not fake on his own radio show? What's to say he's not really fake in person? What's to say he's not just one big phony?
That's a good point. But do you or anyone speaking think that the sum total of what he does... I mean, even if he's a plant, do you think the sum total of what he does is beneficial or not? And is he making his masters happy, in other words?
Well, first of all, you made the point earlier that you wouldn't be listening to this show if it weren't for him. Hell, I wouldn't be doing this show if it weren't for him, you know? So regardless of whatever you think of the guy, he wakes people the frack up. He's grown the movement massively. There's downsides to it, though, because you know how nobody's perfect. I think the same applies here, don't you think?
Exactly. We have to remember that Alex Jones is a human being, and he's not going to be perfect. No one is. So he's going to have his strengths and weaknesses. You know, he doesn't rely on a public PR, for example, to tell him what to say or what not to say. He just says it. And that's a good thing. You know, we can't discredit him completely because he's going to say things that we're going to think as completely ridiculous or even incorrect. But the fact that he's part of this movement, the fact that he's aware of what's happening around this world, and he's got people behind him supporting what he's doing, that's the important thing, I think. And again, it's that whole don't divide and conquer the movement. Just, you know, respect that he's just a person. But I think he's doing the right thing. I think he's doing okay. He's waking up, like you said, he's woken a lot of people up, and that's great.
I'd say he's woken up more people than anybody in human history.
Well, can I say something?
Go ahead, Suzanne.
Yes, he has woken people up. But he has also stifled the entire audience, and the 15 million people who listen to him are not acting. There's a very small percentage of people, like Vinny, like myself, who actually get up and do something on their own. And but the majority of his audience sit back and listen. It's entertainment for them, or it's fear porn for them. And they're not taking it to the next level, which is where we need to be, where we're actually acting on the information that we have instead of just consuming it on a daily basis.
I think the reason being as well is you got to remember that a lot of people are just waking up, or they're not woken up yet. And I sometimes listen to the Alex Jones show, and to be honest, you know, I listen to it and I go, I have no idea what he's talking about. And respect to him, because he's been researching whatever he's been researching full time. But sometimes I think people do switch off because he's not really, you know, his knowledge is completely different to someone who's just woken up. So they're gonna you know, disconnect themselves a little bit, I think, for that reason. So
There's also a sense of urgency when you're listening to an InfoWars broadcast. Like, oh my God, there's now, we've got this new information, we've got this brand news and all this so on and so forth. You know, it's very now, and it creates this great hype that you want to listen to the show every single day and so on and so forth, and it becomes relentless, you know, relentlessly absorbing information. My question is, how much information do you feel that you need to absorb, ladies and gentlemen, before you get off your ass and start applying that information and actually start up exposing scumbaggery in the New World Order? Okay, it took me quite a bit, you know, maybe 6 months to a year of listening and watching documentaries and things like that before I realized that there wasn't anything like that here and started doing it. So what's your point, ladies and gentlemen? When are you going to wake up and start doing something? We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, ladies and gentlemen. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.